The act of changing your environment is the scratch. An architect is scratching when he walks through a rock quarry, studying the algebraic connections of fallen rocks or the surface of a rock wall or the sweeping space of the quarry itself. We see rocks. The architect sees space and feels texture and assesses building materials. All this sensory input may yield an idea. You can scratch through books. I once walked into the office of a 4-star Manhattan chef and his assistant as they were scouring through an enormous pile of international cookbooks, none of them in English, as far as I could tell, obviously looking for menu ideas. They had a dazed, sheepish look in their eyes, dazed because I had interrupted them as they were zoning out in their pursuit of a good idea, sheepish because no one likes to be caught in the act of scratching. Scratching can look like borrowing or appropriating, but it's an essential part of creativity. It's primal and very private. It's a way of saying to the gods, "Oh, don't mind me, I'll just wander around in these back hallways," and then grabbing that piece of fire and running like hell. I'm often asked, "Where do you get your ideas?" This happens to anyone who is willing to stand in front of an audience and talk about his or her work. The short answer is everywhere. It's like asking, "Where do you find the air you breathe?" Ideas are all around you. I hesitate to wax eloquent about the omnipresence of ideas and how everything we need to make something out of nothing, tell a story, design a building, hum a melody, already resides within us in our experience, memories, taste, judgment, critical demeanor, humanity, purpose, and humor. I hesitate because it is so blindingly obvious. If I'm going to be a cheerleader for the creative urge, let it be for something other than the oft-repeated notion that ideas are everywhere. What people are really asking, I suspect, is not, "Where do you get your ideas?" but "How do you get them?" To answer that, you first have to appreciate what an idea is. Ideas take on many forms. There are good ideas and bad ideas, big ideas and little ideas. A good idea is one that turns you on rather than shuts you off. It keeps generating more ideas, and they improve on one another. A bad idea closes doors instead of opening them. It's confining and restrictive. The line between good and bad ideas is very thin. A bad idea in the hands of the right person can easily be tweaked into a good idea. I like the following exchange between the movie producer, Art Linson, and the writer, David Mamet. As Linson recorded it in his book of Hollywood tales, what just happened? "The first rule of producing is to find a writer with an idea, or get an idea and find a writer. Since David Mamet and I had done The Untouchables together, we'd developed a good professional working relationship. You get me a lot of money, I get you a good script. I placed the call. 'Hi, Dave.' 'What's the shot?' he asked. 'I got a new deal. I'm looking for you to write a new script.' 'Fine. There'll be lots of money.' 'Good, let's do it.' 'It's not that easy.' 'Why?' 'Because if you don't tell me what it's about, I can't get you the money.' 'Fine. What do you want it to be about?' 'I don't know. That's why I'm calling you.' 'I understand. Dave, how about an adventure movie?' 'Fine. Something castable. 2 guys, maybe.' 'Fine. Come on, Dave. I need more to go on.' 'Okay. How about 2 guys and a bear?' 'It's a start.' In Hollywood, an adventure movie with 2 guys doesn't quite qualify as an idea. 2 guys and a bear does. It adheres to the unshakable rule that you don't have a really good idea until you combine 2 little ideas. Like all good ideas, it kept moving forward, eventually evolving into the movie The Edge, with Anthony Hopkins and Alec Baldwin. The difference between good and bad ideas is a lot like E.M. Forster's distinction between narrative and plot. Plot is, the queen died, the king died. Narrative is, the queen died, the king died of a broken heart. One man's bear is another's broken-hearted king. That is all you need to know about good ideas and bad. The more useful comparison involves big ideas and little ideas. You, and by you I mean both you and me, dear reader, don't scratch for big ideas. They come upon you mysteriously, unbidden, sometimes unwelcome, especially when they become impossible to execute. There is always an ulterior motive behind a big idea. Usually, that you want to catch people's attention, or make a pile of money, or both. Big ideas are self-contained and self-defining projects. I get them once or twice a year whenever I start to fret about the impermanence of my craft and want to make something enduring. I want people to remember I was here. For me, a big idea is thinking I can film, preserve, and archive all my dances and calling it the Decades Project. A big idea is waking up one day and telling myself I want to make a Broadway musical to the songs of Billy Joel. They are big ideas because they take up a lot of space in my mind, and if I commit to them, they will be all-consuming. They are big ideas because in and of themselves, they are meaningless, little more than a goal or a dream. They cease to exist if I fail to follow up on them with a steady string of small ideas that make each a reality. For the musical, if I can't figure out a way to speak to Billy Joel and get his cooperation, if I can't select the right songs, if I can't construct a recognizable storyline to tie the songs together, if I can't create the dance steps and find the best dancers and persuade people with money to back the show and so on with thousands of other daily sparks and imaginings and choices, then the big idea quickly shrivels and evaporates into nothing. That is why you scratch for little ideas. Without the little ideas, there are no big ideas. Scratching is what you do when you can't wait for the thunderbolt.